WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Hey Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around to get updates on the latest stories happening right here in the Chicago area. But first, let's go shopping, shall we? An Amazon superstore is coming to Orland Park. And by super, I'm talking 230,000 square feet, 800 parking spaces, and a development sitting on 35 acres of land. It's raising big questions like, is this the future of retail or a one-off experiment? And what's the extra traffic going to look like on a stretch that's already quite busy? In a few minutes, we're going to hear from the mayor of Orland Park about what Amazon offers the suburb and what Orland offers Amazon. We'll also get some insight from a retail expert. But joining us now is In the Loop senior producer Meha Ahmed. Hey, Meha.
Hey, Sasha.
So good to see you. And I think it's perfect and fitting that you produced this particular episode because I feel like you're our resident expert. Not only are you just a suburban guru, yeah. But
I know the burbs. Yeah.
But you also know the mall and you know shopping.
Yes, I think probably what I know ends there. But yeah, I mean, I'm very familiar with Orland Park. I'm from the surrounding suburbs. Grew up there and spend a lot of time in that area.
Yeah.
Particularly shopping. I spend a lot of money in that area.
So when you hear that an Amazon superstore is coming to Orland Park, what is your first thought?
I was very surprised. Just because of the amount of retail that is along that stretch of LaGrange. You've got a major mall, Orland Park Square Mall. You've got a lot of big strip malls. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of big box stores and smaller mom and pops, but a lot of the big box stores. You've got a Costco. You've got a Super Walmart. You've got Target. You've got many different grocery stores. Just like so
congested already.
It's already pretty congested, and that's kind of what that stretch is known for, because you've also got a million restaurants and other things that people are trying to get to. So when I heard that there was going to be a first of its kind Amazon superstore, I was a little surprised and maybe a little weary of just the amount of congestion that might come up.
Well, you're not alone because, of course, it's going to, you know, bring hundreds and hundreds of jobs, and that's great, but there are real concerns from the local businesses and the residents who live nearby, and they've signed a petition. Is that right?
So there's a petition going around. They're looking for 1,000 signatures. They're about 570 right now, and it's not a petition against the Amazon superstore.
Okay.
It's a petition that's essentially asking the Village of Orland Park to slow things down a little bit. They just want to have more of public input and find out more about this project. So that's what some residents are calling for. Just like there are residents that are a little bit concerned about, you know, the local impact from to retailers or to traffic, there are just as many residents who are kind of excited and feel like it's a bit of a feather in their cap.
That first of its kind sounds cool.
Amazon is a behemoth of a retailer, and they're choosing to do this big superstore experiment in, of all places, suburban Orland Park.
Yeah. Well, let's get to it. Lots to dive into there. Thank you, Meha.
Sure, Sasha.
Joining me remotely was Orland Park Mayor Jim Dodge. We kicked things off by asking him exactly what will this new Amazon superstore offer?
Well, according to Amazon, it will be a mix of groceries and general merchandise. So people should think Costco and Walmart kind of a shopping experience.
Costco and Walmart kind of put together. Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
that's, yeah, exactly. That's, yep.
The thought of that is already blowing my mind, right? And add to that the thousands of square footage. But I wonder why 159th and LaGrange, because that's a pretty busy intersection, Mayor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Costco originally wanted to be right at that intersection, but they couldn't work out the land purchase a decade or so or more ago. And Amazon was looking around for this new concept. It fits the zoning. That area is zoned for this type of use. And, you know, to Amazon, as they said at the public hearings, it is the corner of Main Street and Main Street in terms of 159th and LaGrange. So it was a pretty prime piece of real estate for retail development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, just thinking of the area, that there's already so much there, right? You know, you've got, as you mentioned, the Costco, several strip malls, restaurants, small businesses too. What would we expect Amazon to bring that's not already available?
Yeah, there's a couple, great question, right? A couple things there. So Orland is probably well over a million plus. I think the mall alone is 1 million square feet of retail, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of retail in Orland. And if you look at the numbers behind Chicago, Schaumburg, and maybe one other northern suburb, we're the fourth highest sales tax producer in Cook County. And we're probably in top 10 in the state of Illinois. So Orland's a retail center. So it's no surprise to us that retailers look at Orland and want to be there. We're about to have an expanded Dick's Sporting Goods in the mall to replace the now dead Sears store at Orland Square Mall. So mm-hmm. what I think they're going to bring is going to be unique to Amazon, right? I think that Amazon's good at a number of things, and this is their first big push into what we can call bricks and mortar retail. Mm-hmm. They know, right? Amazon's growth in retail has been at the same time as Costco's growth in retail and Walmart's growth in retail. So they know they're heading into a fiercely competitive environment, but it's also an attractive area for them.
Yes.
Because of LaGrange and 159th.
You know, well, you know, what Amazon brings, I think, is so uniquely Amazon. And we've just become so used to Amazon being right at the click of a mouse, right? Right at our fingertips. Are people ready, Mayor Dodge, you know, to go into a big box store? Do they even want that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've had a lot of feedback during the course of all this, because this first became public back in April, and all the public notices have been going out for months. So this has been quite the topic of conversation out in Orland for a long time. And so if you a number of mostly women who do probably the primary grocery shopping for their homes, they'll tell you how the shopping experience has changed in traditional grocery because they're trying to get around the people who are picking up somebody else's orders. And, you know, Amazon said in the public hearing, they're not going to do it that way. That's why they have a pretty big back room. So the front of their store will probably be the size of your average Target or Costco. The back of the store, which then makes it about the size of your average super Walmart, like in Orland Hills, just two blocks away, is where they're going to keep all the things. So they're going to, what they've said is, if you walk in and you see the 5-pound bag of dog food, but you want the 50-pound bag of dog food, they, Amazon, will go get it and then bring it out to your car. So I think it's going to be a blend, to your point a second ago, of what people are used to from Amazon in terms of, you see it, you order it, you get it, and then they find a way to help you get it into your car. Or if you want a blue sweater, not a red sweater, they will go provide it for you at the register as part of their shopping experience. Mm-hmm. So that's the exciting part about this.
We talked to a few residents in Orland Park. Mm-hmm. The general concerns that we heard were around traffic. So I'm going to paraphrase a couple of folks here. Jackie, who is one resident, said that she's worried about congestion in an area where congestion is already at, quote, such a high volume. We talked to another resident named Crystal who echoed those concerns. But Crystal did say that it could be a good use of the empty land there. She followed up with, you know, I don't think we have a choice. And I want to play a little bit of what Frank had to say.
The key to me is the first of its kind part. I think that puts us on the map in a different way. I am a bit concerned about the traffic it'll cause, but I'm guessing that would be fairly temporary.
So Frank, you know, he said he was excited about the first of its kind part. putting Orland Park, you know, on the map in a different way. Why do you think that Orland Park is being chosen for this experiment, this retail experiment, Mayor?
Yeah, well, I think it's a couple things. So one, you know, we are a strong regional shopping center. I think that on some of the data we've seen, anywhere between 10 and 15 million people a year visit Orland Park to go shopping. Right. So that's there's obviously a customer base here, and it's the surrounding areas. It's not just Orland Park. Right. It's clearly the South Suburban area that shops in Orland. And two, a big factor is the space was available. Right. There's just not a whole lot of prime intersections where you have the 30 plus acres that they need for the development. So I think a couple of things came together. And on the traffic concerns, if you don't mind, I'd like to address those specifically. We sure. are using the future property and sales tax we're going to be getting from this area to extend Ravinia. So now if you're coming to Orland, you want to go to Amazon or Costco, because they're going to be on the same road, you can now get to them off of 161st and LaGrange. We're going to put in a new intersection to kind of extend Ravinia Road and make it easier for everybody to get in and out and through that intersection. So that's one part. The other part is we've just kicked off, and we were in the process of kicking it off before Amazon really went through the approval process, is to take a comprehensive look at all the traffic in Orland. One of the main things that plagues, and I've been a Southsider, I grew up in the 40th and California in the city, moved out to Orland years ago. Mm-hmm. We in the South suburbs generally have lagged the region on transportation assets. I was just at an event the other day in Posen, and I was talking to some other mayors, and we were talking about the fact that how long it took the state to connect 57 and 294, you know, unconscionable in terms of what it did to the area in terms of slowing down economic development. And where I'm going with this is, if you look at the grid of major roads like LaGrange, you have to go almost 3 miles to the east to get to Harlem, which also runs north and south. So there's one of the reasons I think the southwest suburbs and the south suburbs generally also right. have traffic problems is we don't have a fully developed road grid to kind of spur economic development and quality of life. So the folks are not wrong when they say, hey, you're going to see an increase in traffic. Absolutely true. We are also doing everything we can with the state to flesh out those intersections, improve the lighting, extend some roads to mitigate that. We're pretty mindful of the of the impact here.
Yeah, and you know, there's a petition going around, right? It's calling for a pause on this decision to build the development. As I mentioned earlier, folks thought that this kind of happened quickly. Residents want more of a chance to jump in with input. How else are you engaging with residents in this process?
Yeah, we've done so. That petition, in my humble opinion, was reacting to a lot of deliberate disinformation, as opposed to misconceptions about the project. And so what we tried to do from the village's perspective is make sure that everybody knew exactly what this was. People kept saying it's warehouse and distribution. No, it's not, because our zoning wouldn't allow warehouse and distribution on that corner. It's a massive Amazon center like they have at Vollmer and Harlem. No, it's not. That's 3 million square feet. This is 230,000 square feet. Almost the same size as a Walmart supercenter two blocks away on 159th Street. So we did everything we could from the village to absolutely follow the process the village has always followed. The public notice, the mm-hmm. sign on the right-of-way, notices to the paper, articles in the paper, social media posts through the village. But some of this became inherently political pretty quickly mm-hmm. when in fact it was a simple policy question. Does this commercial use fit this commercial zoning, and what restrictions or constraints do we want to put on the right. petition? That's so in a way it's very simple, but everything nowadays becomes political.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. That's Orland Park Mayor Jim Dodge. Thank you for checking in with us.
Have a great day. Thank you.
And at the table here in studio with me is retail expert Steve Kane, who's a partner at Bain & Company, an expert in Bain's retail and customer strategy and marketing practices. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Good to see you, Steve. So Amazon, you know, has changed the game in retail. I mean, you heard my conversation there with the mayor, and I'm curious to hear, first of all, what your overall thoughts were.
Well, it's an interesting time for Amazon to be launching something like this. You mentioned at the beginning that They are just announced the closure of all of these other retail concepts that they've been experimenting with. And I mean, they have a history of real experimentation in this space. But to see Amazon Fresh stores, Amazon Go stores, mm-hmm. both of which have been present here in the Chicago area, to see them close, it's interesting for them to then be on the brink of launching something new.
Yeah. What does that move signal to you? Because you bring up a valid point. The Amazon Fresh stores, the Go stores are nearly all closing down.
Yep.
Now we say, okay, scrap that. Let's do a massive superstore that no one's ever seen before. What could be the thinking there, the reasoning there, you think?
Yeah. You know, they have never shied away from technology, experimentation, and all that. And so the concepts that they have played with have been very tech forward, you know, the Just Walk Out technology or, you know, other ways that they've tried to integrate e-commerce into these formats. But they've also been a little bit more of a premium experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a recognition that those haven't worked. The unit economics don't make sense. And if we really want to be in this game, we need to be in sort of more of a value-oriented suburban shopping setting where we can compete for mass retail at a price point that most people accept.
Yes. So finding, you know, an empty 35 acres in Orland Park, that's by design.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
So I'm going to ask you something similar to what I asked the mayor. I mean, do customers want this? Do they want to get offline and go back to in-person shopping?
So broadly, I would say yes. And the reason I would say that is if you look at where all the growth is flowing in the retail space, most of it is going to people like Walmart, Target, Costco. These are the big winners right now.
Mm-hmm.
So despite the fact that e-commerce continues to increase in popularity and penetration, still the vast majority of shopping is done in a brick and mortar environment. Now, the mayor mentioned this as well. This is a very crowded space. You've got over 3,500 Walmart supercenters in the country. You've got 600 or 700 Costcos.
Right.
You've got hundreds of Targets. And then locally here, we've got, you know, Mariano's and Jewel-Osco and Meijer, all of these players that are vying for basically the same business.
Yeah, but this is being called a first of its kind.
Yeah.
How would you say, you know, from your expert viewpoint, that this would be different?
Yeah, it's tough to know at this stage, to be honest. What we do know, and the mayor touched on this, is they've declared that this will be about half of a retail store that consumers will go in and shop, and
mm-hmm.
then half of it will be dedicated to online fulfillment. Now, every retailer is doing some combination of this. It's not uncommon to find at a Walmart Supercenter or a Meijer to have a micro-fulfillment center in the back that a customer wouldn't see, where they're fulfilling online orders out of the back of the store to keep it out of the aisles. So every retailer that's experimenting is, mm-hmm. has some combination of this. This, I think Amazon will push this to a much more extreme end and see if they can take really half of that square footage and use it for e-commerce. So I think that will be the interesting play. And they even admitted as they announced the closure of all their Amazon Fresh stores that experience wasn't differentiated in any real
right.
way. So customers didn't really need it on top of what they already have.
Yeah. And, you know, and on top of the concerns, right, of traffic and the timeline of this entire process, of course, there are bright sides to a development like this. The mayor pointed some out. I think we should also touch on the 500 jobs Amazon is expecting to create, right? Half of those will be full-time roles. A couple hundred will be some temporary construction jobs. But that's a positive, right, Steve?
Absolutely. And I'm excited to see what they do. I mean, they're on the forefront of experimentation, and they come to this with a tremendous number of assets. I mean, obviously, their Prime membership program is huge and allows them to understand their consumer base really well and track them and
mm-hmm.
ultimately provide them personalized offers. So it'll be interesting to see how they bring some of this technology that they've learned over the years into this environment. It will be exciting. It does put Orland Park on the map in that sense.
Yes.
Whether or not customers ultimately embrace it, for a store of this scale to be successful, they need to be doing millions and millions of dollars of revenue weekly. And that's going to be the challenge. They're going to have to steal that business from all of the crowded space that's around them.
What about the small businesses in the area? What do you think is the impact to them?
It's a good question.
Because we're talking about, you know, the impact to all these big box stores.
Yeah.
What about the mom and pops?
And Amazon has a history of taking companies like that down over the years. Yeah, as they, you know, they started in books decades ago, and then they marched their way through all these categories of retail, disrupted them, and in many cases we've seen other businesses go out of business because they couldn't survive.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, for those local, depending on how they show up, particularly outside of grocery, in the general merchandise stores, you know, space as they think about how they tackle home goods or sporting goods or some of these other areas, technology, consumer electronics. If there are mom and pop stores in that area that are trying to serve that customer, it'll be a challenge.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about success and what success would look like here. In your view, Steve, I mean, what would a successful integration into Orland Park be for this superstore?
Well, they're going to have to attract a lot more customers than are probably currently shopping in the area in order to for the surrounding retailers that are already there with entrenched customer bases mm-hmm. to survive, and for this store to then thrive in the midst of all that, it's going to have to draw more traffic. I think this one store, as in any experiment, will probably not be a wild success right out of the gate. Mm. They're going to learn some things. And the only reason a store like this makes sense is if you can replicate it hundreds, if not thousands of times.
I think that's the point, right? They want to try this in Orland Park. Hopefully it's going to be a blueprint
yep.
for other cities, right? And maybe even other parts of our region. And you can copy and paste.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. You know, not far from this studio, Steve, is Michigan Avenue. It's another shopping thoroughfare. And it's one that's been struggling significantly, especially in recent years. We've talked a lot about this on the program. So as we talk now about the Amazon Superstore and just retail experimentation, is that a place you think where retailers and the city should be experimenting? Is there room for that?
There's always room for it. Yes, absolutely. This will be what's happening on Michigan Avenue is fundamentally different than what Amazon is trying to address with a much more suburban mass value orientation. You know, Michigan Avenue's success will be driven by, you know, significant brands making a mark on that street, really playing to that local consumer mm-hmm. and the tourist consumer that is primarily there. So that's a very different retail experiment. And we've seen a lot of people come and go. And it goes through cycles,
but it does,
yes. feels like we're on the brink of another, you know, positive cycle where some of that vacancy is beginning to fill in with brands that are new to the world, new to the Chicago market, which brings new energy to that street.
Yeah, interesting. Steve Cain is a partner at Bain & Company and an expert in Bain's retail and customer strategy and marketing practices. Thank you so much.
Of course. Happy to do it.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Okay, now it's time to get into the top local stories of the day. At the table to help me break them down was Claire Lane, WBEZ's Morning Edition anchor, and Elvia Malagon, Chicago Sun-Times health reporter. We started with the big day on the calendar. It's Groundhog Day. But while Punxsutawney Phil's prediction is that there are 6 more weeks of winter, Claire Lane had the latest on Illinois' festivities and at-home predictor.
Yes, we have a resident groundhog in the state of Illinois. This is in Woodstock. Was bustling with Groundhog Day festivities this morning. This is for Woodstock Willie's prognostication. Very similar to Punxsutawney Phil's annual prediction in Pennsylvania. You know, Willie has his own stump. He gets summoned out of that stump by a polka band. Mm-hmm. And in the town square, there was hundreds of people this morning, about 51 miles away from Chicago. So what Woodstock Willie predicted, quite contradictory to Punxsutawneyville.
Oh, give me the good news, Claire.
He's saying we're going to have an early spring.
Ah.
So this was this morning. And you, we should note that the town of Woodstock is where the movie Groundhog's Day was filmed.
Yeah. Well, listen, Woodstock Willie has always been my favorite.
They're both equally cute, but we have to rep our hometown groundhog. No Bill Murray sighting in the town of Woodstock today.
Okay.
But we're looking toward an early spring, looking forward to it.
Who are you choosing to believe, Elvia?
I think I want spring, I want hope, so I'm going to go for that.
Willie's our guy. Sticking with you here, Elvia, we've got new snap rules now. They've gone into effect since yesterday. Remind us what the requirements are for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
Yeah, so basically these new work rules are extended. So for example, now people up to the age 64 will be required to work or volunteer at least 80 hours per month. And also another big change is for parents. Before it was parents who had a child 18 and under. Now it's 14 and under. So mm-hmm. some parents of teenagers will also have to abide by these new work rules. Mm. And they're going into effect starting this month, but people will have like 3 months basically before they're officially kicked off of the program. So a lot of advocates have been pushing people to apply for an exemption to see if they're able to do that. I know there's also some groups that are working towards figuring out how can we get people more volunteer hours.
Right.
And food pantries around the city are definitely bracing for the potential impact of more people coming yes. and needing more food.
Yeah, how many residents are we talking about in Illinois, you think?
State officials had said that as many as 400,000
wow.
People could be impacted by this. So it certainly is a pretty big amount of people, and a lot of them also will be in this area.
Well, and the time investment is really interesting because oftentimes, you know, people that are on SNAP, you know, are looking for full-time work.
Right.
So you're asking them to commit time mm-hmm. just to be able to receive these benefits while on top of time that they're presumably needing
oh,
to
yeah.
seek employment.
It's totally yeah. throwing a wrench in some families. You talked to Chicago area residents about this, Elvia, and I wonder what they're thinking now about how to navigate these new requirements. What did folks share with you?
There's a lot of confusion about how what's going to be considered work, how they're going to be able to do it. And one man that I talked to said, you know, there's more barriers than just finding work. That's a barrier in itself. But one person that I talked to, because of his past criminal record, the stigma still follows him and he still has a lot of trouble finding work. Another expert that I talked to mentioned that for parents, you know, in particular, it might be hard just because of school schedules. Sometimes emergencies happen with children.
Yeah.
So sometimes those folks really need flexible work hours and that could be really difficult to find.
Claire, last week, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson called for bold action against aggressive tactics that we've been seeing from federal immigration agents. Now he's made a bold move of his own.
Yeah, and he's been saying this, as we know, throughout Operation Midway Blitz and then at the U.S. Conference of Mayors last week, leading to a Saturday announcement, which he signed an executive order that he says directs the Chicago Police Department to pursue charges against violent federal agents. Mm. So he signed this calling it ICE on notice. That's the order requiring CPD officers to report any illegal activity that they see, that they witness by federal agents, essentially to the Cook County State's Attorney for prosecution.
Well, the Chicago woman who was shot 5 times by Border Patrol agents last fall is speaking out. I want to play a little bit of what Miramar Martinez told WBEZ and the Sun-Times in an exclusive interview.
I'm a testimony. I am here for a reason, right? I survived getting shot 5 times. I don't want nobody passing through this. I don't want nobody. Like, there should be a change, right? And I want to use my voice.
You know, I remember when this happened, Claire, at the time, you know, we had seen at least one death here in the Chicago area at the hands of ICE. And now if you think fast forward what we've been seeing play out in Minneapolis, I think it's no wonder Miramar is now saying, listen, I'm one of many right now, and I happen to still be here. I mean, what else did she have to say in that testimony?
Well, because of that, I mean, she was in, you know, just a car following these SUVs of masked ICE agents, just warning people in neighborhoods,
right,
potential immigrants about what was going on. She was shot 5 times. And at this point, she's ready to speak. She's saying she wants to be an outspoken voice against this deadly use of force. She says she's demanding government accountability following what she mentioned, Sasha, the shootings in Minneapolis. And as we know, after she was shot, then she faced criminal charges.
That's right. Right? Yeah.
Which have since she's been cleared of those. But, you know, Martinez just wants to be this person who is not willing to back down at this point.
Now, Elvia, state health officials, they're sounding the alarm on the life expectancy conversation that we've been having. Now, this is for folks who are unhoused specifically. What are the details that we should know here?
Yeah, one of the things that really stood out about this report was the age. For folks experiencing homelessness, it's about 55.5 compared to the rest of the population, 74.2
years. How long they're expected to live.
Yes. Mm, okay. So that's a pretty drastic difference. And folks are more likely to die from drug overdoses or excessive cold. They also pointed out, which I thought was pretty interesting, is that they dug into some of the folks, this data that they were looking into. Some of them were folks who were veterans, people who had worked public sector jobs, mm-hmm. which I found really interesting. And then they also looked at the hospital visits, the increased amount of like ER visits that they have. So the state did issue some recommendations. One that I found really interesting was to do a statewide assessment of warming centers. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we often hear advocates push against, is the warming centers are often maybe not open for long enough or not overnight is in particular one of the gaps
right,
yep. in providing housing.
I mean, whatever folks. We can, 20 years of a difference is massive. Claire, the Chicago Teachers Union, it wants to bargain over remote learning options. What's going on?
So this is in a general bargaining CTU with Chicago Public Schools over working conditions with the possible return, as we've been alluding to this spring, of federal immigration agents. So they're saying, they're arguing that just establishing that remote learning is an option is what they say is a way for staff to better support their immigrant families and among the things that they want to continue to negotiate over. Some parents and some state lawmakers are also putting pressure on the school district to offer some temporary remote learning options. Cities like Minneapolis and St. Paul have already done this.
Yeah, so more pressure to, I mean, as a parent, I think it would make sense.
Get the Zooms up.
Get the logs up. Yeah. Elvia, some advocates for Illinois safety net hospitals, they're bracing for impact from the Trump administration's budget and spending bill, the one big, beautiful bill.
Yes.
What is it doing now?
So this is basically in response to that, because there are a lot of expected changes to Medicaid. And in particular, there's been a lot of concern about what that's going to mean for safety net hospitals. So this HEAL grant program is something that they're trying to push at the state level, and something that it will do will codify past public health grants into law. And they're also hoping that this stabilizes some of the funding for safety net hospitals. Mm-hmm. So that's something that they're pushing here. And we're seeing this happening all over the country as people are really trying to grapple with the effects of the big, beautiful bill.
Oh, yeah. This weekend, here's something we saw, Claire. The White Sox Fest at the Romova Theater.
Remember the White Sox?
Yeah, remember them? So this White Sox Fest, it happened up in Bridgeport at the Romova Theater. What is White Sox Fest?
So both teams do this. Cubs is called Cubs Convention. White Sox is a similar thing. It's a weekend thing that they do leading up to pitchers and catchers reporting, getting fans excited, introducing new players, you know, players speaking directly to fans, signing autographs.
Have you been?
Kissing babies. No, I have not been
what
to
about you,
any
Elvia?
Of these fan
I
fests.
Have not, but my allegiance is very strongly with the White Sox.
Okay.
She's
so Elvia is watching you closely. There will be no White Sox slander.
But there's some very exciting stuff for the White Sox. They had a less worse season last season than they did the previous two 100 loss seasons. But they've got Mooney. Remember, we've been talking about him. Murakami, he's a Japanese slugger. So he was there, you know, people just sort of talking a little shop ahead of spring.
Sounds good. What other stories are you following?
This is something we were reporting on last week about the city's annual Name a Snowplow contest, and the finalists in this Name a Snowplow competition are in, and Abolish ICE, that is the name, literally, and sort of standing up for immigration rights here in Chicago.
That's timely.
This is leading the pack. Department of Streets and Sand released the 25 finalists just yesterday. So Abolish ICE so far has made up 70% of all name submissions. Others include Caleb Chilliams and Buckingham Plowton.
I love it.
So Chicagoans can now vote for up to six names because this is a Power to the People initiative, and it closes February 14th. So you got time to get your votes in.
All right, Elvia, Illinois Secretary of State Alexei Janulius, he wants to crack down on e-bikes and e-scooters. What's going on?
Yeah, so basically, they're trying to update legislation and the laws governing this because now e-bikes go up to like 50 miles per hour, which is pretty fast. And also, there's really no age limits right now. So one of the things that they're going to do is they want to include information about this in driver's ed across the state so that more younger people, as they're getting on these bikes, are able to kind of navigate it in the same way that we think about cars. And
right.
Being able to like really safely navigate roads. So this is really meant to try to keep up with the times. And certainly, I mean, I personally have started to see more of these like on the road next
to me. I thought you were going to say, I personally have started to ride them.
No. I'm too
scared. I'm trying to picture you flying down Lakeshore Drive.
maybe that could be my summer goal. But no, I've seen them along the road. I've seen them downtown a bunch, like delivering food. So it definitely is something that is happening, and as they're growing in popularity, I think the state is trying to keep up.
Some extra guidelines I don't think will hurt, right? Because they can get dangerous,
yes,
as we've seen. Did you watch the Grammys last night? Or watch highlights?
I did not, but I think of it as an appetizer for Bad Bunny Super Bowl.
That's right. Well, did you see his big win last night?
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible. I mean, I think he sat there for a good 30 seconds just taking it all in when his name was called, just before he was even able to get up and go on stage, because it was just such a monumental moment. So shout out to Bad Bunny. It's Bad Bunny week, I think. Two big Chicago artists, though, that had a great night at the Grammys as well, Mavis Staples and Buddy Guy. Congratulations to them. Well, WBEZ's Claire Lane and Elvia Malagon with the Sun-Times. Thank you.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Maha Ahmed, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.